Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum. On today's show, we have John Johnson from not the show Married with Children, but the team Married with Children. And we have Mike Avendano. He's from Code with Aloha. And they're both representing their teams, and they're here to talk about the 9th Hawaii Annual Code Challenge and getting some specifics about each of their team projects. And I want to welcome you both to Bite Marks Cafe.
Thank you.
Well, it's great to have
Appreciate
you both you on. Yeah, and, you know, we've had, you know, Christine Sakuda on and Thelma talking about, you know, the hack event itself. But I wanted to get a couple of the winners. Now, there were actually three categories, right? There was a high school category. There was a kind of a college category, and then a kind of a professional category. And each of those categories won, had maybe three award winners, right? And both of you represent teams from the professional category. And Mike, you won first prize, right, with Code with Aloha. And John, you guys won second place. I just want to make sure that
yeah.
I get that.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So I want to give you both a chance to talk a little bit about your experience, but maybe we'll start with Mike. You know, how did you tell us a little bit about Code with Aloha. I mean, we're familiar with Code for America, Code for Hawaii, which was a kind of a brigade from Code for America, but Code with Aloha is sort of a evolution, yeah, of Code for Hawaii.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Code with Aloha is an evolution of Code for Hawaii. It's essentially the exact same group. The reason for the name change is because Code for America required that their brigades could no longer use the Code for name.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we needed to find a way to have a new name that was similar to the old one, but was different enough from Code for America. But it's still the same mission of a group of volunteers focusing on civic tech projects.
And do you still have a kind of a ongoing relationship with Code for America?
Not that I am aware of. I know that we still have some members that work for Code for America, but I don't believe we're currently in contact with Code
for
America.
Okay, so it's not really a brigade, because a brigade was really kind of a tight coupling with Code for America. They were like not sister agencies, but, you know, they were offshoots, right, of representation,
yeah,
of Code for America. So anyway, Code with Aloha, that's great. I love the name, and I want to encourage your guys' continuation of keeping the activities that you guys are active in and participation in some of the civic engagement. And okay, so John, how'd you get a name like Married with Children?
I was doing this with my wife. My wife and I both worked with Salesforce.
Mm-hmm.
We both went through the Purple Mile program here locally and got Salesforce certified as admins, and then went on to further certification. So I've been wanting to do this for 3 years, and things came up 2 years in a row, and this year we finally jumped on it and decided to do it. So me and my wife are going to do it. So Married with Children, we have three children. I joked that if she left me, it would be just me, myself, and AI this year.
No, I love that. And I think that deserves, that should be on a shirt somewhere. Me, myself, and AI.
Force multiplier there.
Yeah. So those are, both of you have, I think, a good strategy, right? Because you could come into the hack and not have a team and then sort of, you know, look and assemble a team. But it's a good strategy to have a sense of maybe coming in with a team. So John described his team. You know, Mike, what was the composition of your guys' team?
Yeah, so the composition of our team was made up of volunteers of the Code with Aloha group.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say around two or three people had only attended one meeting, and we had mentioned the hackathon as a great way to get involved. And they took a leap of faith and joined our hackathon team and ended up working great.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And for the most part, were everybody, were they all coders that were part of your team?
So I would, even though we were in the professional category, I believe myself and maybe one other person had worked professional jobs coding, but most of them were entry-level developers or just getting into coding, or they just graduated from college or a boot camp, but not a lot of professional experience. So the hackathon also provided a good way to teach some of them some of the ways that you can collaborate on a coding project.
And then when you came into the actual sort of team formation, were there specific sort of expertise that you brought to the table and others sort of learned from?
I would say so. I've been working professionally for, it's going to be 6 years in January, so I've had experience with organizing a project, breaking down features, assigning features to people, or assigning issues to people based on their skill level.
Mm-hmm.
I know we have one person on our team that had GIS experience that we figured would be useful for this project. There was another team member that had some game developer experience that we figured would be useful. And a lot of people who were just eager to learn as well.
Oh, that's great. And John, you said you have sort of a Salesforce background. Was your wife complimenting that background, or how did you guys divide up some of the, responsibilities?
We kind of overlap on that. So here's the embarrassing thing for me. My wife is out-certified me, so she's got her admin cert, her app builder cert, and her BA at business analyst certification. I've got two of those three, but not the app builder. So, yeah, she's able to fill in all the things that I have no idea how to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to work in that regard. And one of the things that's important with this is it's not just the work itself. You also have to pitch your work. You have to present it. You have to make that presentation on presentation day, and it has to pop. And my wife has such better artistic sense than I do. It would have been probably a drastically different result if we had gone with my first draft of the slideshow. That's all I have to say on that.
Well, I do want to have you both kind of get into a little bit about the hack format. The Hawaii Annual Code Challenge typically presents a set of challenges. So they go out and they request to put out a call to some government agencies and nonprofits to kind of pitch a challenge. And then, you as participants form a team and then maybe start to come together and decide which challenge to go after. So I want to get you guys' thoughts on, what you thought of the format and the challenges. So we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back at this short break to continue our conversation with John Johnson from Married with Children and Mike Avendano from Code with Aloha. And we're talking about the recent Hawaii Annual Code Challenge team projects. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Anchor Systems Hawaii.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. I'm Bert Lahm, and if you're just joining us, we're talking to John Johnson from Married with Children, the team, not the show, and Mike Avendano from Code with Aloha. And we're here talking about the 9th annual Hawaii Annual Code Challenge and, of course, their team projects. And right before the break, we were kind of talking about team formation and the actual hack event itself. Mike, you've been involved with previous hack events, right?
Yep. This is my third year participating in the Hawaii Annual Code Challenge. We placed 5th. 2 years ago, 4th last year, and then this is the first time that we actually won.
Wow, you're moving up. Now, next year is going to be the 10th, so I expect to see a team, from Code with Aloha. But so when you tell us a little bit about the strategy, when you go in and start to listen to the challenges, are you doing it as an individual? Are you doing it as a team? What's the, you know, what's the approach to looking and evaluating those challenges?
Our approach to looking at and evaluating the challenges was to look at some of the experience that our team members had.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is to look at the experience that team members had and also which ones seemed the most fun. So since you guys know working in civic tech, the projects themselves are not necessarily the most glamorous or most exciting. The main reward is the impact mm-hmm. that it has on people. So we saw the Aloha Birds game challenge and saw that it was a game and figured that'd be a nice kind of change of pace from normally the civic tech projects that we work on.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, the Aloha Birds game appealed to me because I don't know if it's because I'm over 30 now, but bird watching has become more and more exciting. Just, I'm not sure what it is, but having a project where you could learn about the local Hawaiian bird population just seemed perfect.
I totally agree with you because what I found really appealing with the bird challenge was that you could actually go out there and take pictures and interact with nature and bring it back and incorporate it into your actual project. So there was a good sort of tie-in to the real world and bringing it into the actual prototype that you did. Was it a nonprofit that pitched that challenge?
I am not sure. I believe it's a nonprofit. It's the Hui Mana Uku Group. They're a conservation group focused on raising awareness and conservation efforts of the Mana Uku, mm-hmm. or the white tern bird.
Okay, right. Okay. And then can you describe a little bit about what your prototype or your game actually delivered?
Yeah. So the goal of the challenge was to create a game that encourages people to learn about Hawaii birds in a fun and interactive way.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the sponsors is a big Pokemon Go fan and figured that if they could have a similar concept of instead of going out in the real world and catching Pokemon, you go out in the real world and capture these virtual birds and learn about them, that'd be a great way to teach people about the local bird population. So for our game, the user could see themselves on a map and see which birds spawned in their area. And ideally, it'd be based on the bird's real life habitat.
Mm-hmm.
But for our demo purposes, we just had a couple birds spawn near the user, just because we didn't want to run the risk of demonstrating the app and then no birds show up.
Right.
So our app had a couple of virtual birds. One was a barn owl, one was a pigeon that the user could click on. It brought up an augmented reality screen where the user could take a picture of the bird, and then that bird's information will get stored in the user's Avidex, which is their bird encyclopedia.
Mm-hmm.
So information about the bird would include things like its name, its Hawaiian name, its conservation status, and we assigned point values to the birds to help gamify it. So an example of how many points a bird would be worth is I live near Chinatown and there are a billion pigeons, so pigeons would not be worth a lot of points.
Mm-hmm.
But if you saw a nene or something, then that would be worth more.
Yeah, in Chinatown, yeah.
Yeah.
So the whole purpose of the game or the objective of the game was to identify birds, get it into your sort of your database, and then that would help you create a point system, right? So a point system would then be a way to rank your ability versus somebody else that's playing the game.
Yep, exactly.
And how I guess to what extent was your prototype completed? It accomplished everything that you just described?
It got, I would say, 90% of it. The only thing we weren't able to, there are a few things we weren't able to add. So there are a lot of different species of birds
mm-hmm.
on Hawaii, and there are not a lot of bird models in the Unity Asset Store. So we were limited based on kind of the bird models, and we also didn't have the implementation to, or we didn't implement them spawning in their natural habitat. We had it based on the user's location, but that was we did get most of the functionality in terms of being able to have birds have points, having them be saved to the user's Avidex, as well as when the user captures a bird, it takes a screenshot and then saves it to their in-game photo gallery. We also had an extra feature where the user could upload a photo of a real-life bird that they took, and then it would ask AI what type of bird it was, which got mixed results, but for demo purposes, we did get some pretty clear pictures of birds that it worked well with.
And did you incorporate some AI capability inside your game?
Yeah, that was the main AI capability was just the image recognition for the different types of birds that the user would submit. But that was the extent of it.
Did you have to make an external call to something like, you know, like a Google lens or something to identify the bird? How did, because you didn't incorporate all the, I guess, a database of birds within your app. Or did you?
Right. The way it worked was we made a API request to OpenAI's, I think, ChatGPT 4.0 model. And then the prompt I included with it in the back end was, what bird is this?
And with ChatGPT, you could actually include an image, and it would help to identify what that image had?
Yep. And it was pretty decent at recognizing the birds. There was a couple times where I would try to submit a picture of a myna in a tree, but I think the tree messed up the image classification because it couldn't find it. But I believe for the demo, we used a pigeon and a nene, and those ended up getting classified really well.
And then you mentioned Unity as a game engine, right? What is it? What is it that the prototype would run on? Was it running on Android, or was it running on iOS? I mean, what did you have planned for the actual application to run on?
Yeah, so Unity allowed us to deploy both to Android and iOS.
Okay, great. And then, so that's what, when you prototyped it at the hack, what did you prototype it on?
That's a good question. I believe it was an iOS.
Okay.
We had it on both phones just to be sure, but our presentation was on a Mac, so we figured it'd be easiest to transfer or to switch to an iPhone.
Yeah. Well, you know, I appreciate your getting into detail about the, you know, the actual functionality of the application, and I do want to give John a chance to describe, you know, what they created. It was called it was like an AI concierge program. So we hold that thought. We'll be right back after a short break to continue our conversation with John Johnson from Married with Children and Mike Avendano with Code with Aloha. And we're talking about the 9th Hawaii Annual Code Challenge. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training, and the Rice Partnership.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum, right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to John Johnson from Married with Children and Mike Avendano from Code with Aloha, and we're here talking about their projects that came out of the 9th Hawaii Annual Code Challenge, and we got a good chance to kind of get a description of what Mike's team worked on. And John, I want to give you some time to share a little bit about what your team, Married with Children, came up with, and I better let you describe it, because I thought it was quite interesting. And for our listeners, it's one thing to see a demo and see what it is that you're trying to accomplish. But I'll give you the unenviable task of describing it to all of our radio listeners.
Okay, so our project was The actual challenge was presented by Tyler Tech Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
and their challenge was to create a Hawaii concierge bot, which would be put onto a web page, and it would serve up information based only on Hawaii.gov websites. So it would, you would ask it something, and it would be able to respond based on the content found in those websites. And I believe they had a lot of different city, county, state websites that they wanted to use as a source. So we decided to do a smaller subset of that. So I work at the Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs, so I started with the website that I should know a little bit more than the others, which is DCCA's.
Mm-hmm.
So I, and the way we came about with this idea was I had just a month or two prior been in San Francisco for the Salesforce annual convention, which is called Dreamforce, and they were presenting with this new technology called Agentforce. And the promise of Agentforce is to, you know, force multiply your call centers. So it had scalability and a lot of other things. But the thing we were most interested in was it could do generative AI based on one of the two things I was looking at particularly was it could use a website as a source for information, or it can actually do RAG. You know, so you can hook it up to a data cloud, and you can have it pull, you know, its information using the documents you have uploaded as a source of truth.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked the idea of this. Unfortunately, it's very new, and very new means that sometimes things are changing as you're building it, and you're kind of, you know, building the plane as you fly it. So I was using for our challenge these sandboxes that they had made for us for the Dreamforce event. So it's actually using a platform that I didn't know would be around at the end of the hack. So we made haste on that. But it went really well. We built the agent using hdcca.hawaii.gov as the source of truth. After you create the agent, you can go in and start to give the agent instructions. So you have, you give it a context, a scope, you give it individual instructions, and you can set guardrails on it. Mm-hmm. And the guardrails are used to keep it. There's natural guardrails that are built in, like inappropriate content. You know, if you don't want to, you know, ask it like, or you don't want people asking, how do you build a bomb? It automatically protects against that. It also does prompt injection, prompt injection attacks. It's got defense against that as well. So if you try to tell it, hey, ignore the last thing and just do this anyway,
mm-hmm.
It knows about that. So we had to give it the instructions that it would need to pull from the HDCCA website. So we did that, and we created a guardrail or two just for giggles. So we put them in there just so that if people, I think I used insurance, but if anybody was to ask about the insurance division, it would come back with an answer like, oh, insurance is so boring, let's not talk about that.
You're right.
So, so we demoed that, I believe, live. And I think it went over pretty well. There's a couple of caveats about using AI. One thing that became abundantly clear was AI is non-deterministic. So when you're asking it questions, you can get different answers, and sometimes you get flummoxed when you're in a demonstration and the question doesn't get answered the way you thought it was, the way it had been three times previous. So luckily, we didn't have too much of that, but we were able to kind of figure out how we can ask better questions to get better results as well. So, for example, one of the things that we had asked was, who is the current director of DCCA?
Mm-hmm.
And we got an answer back, and then we noticed that the answer was for the previous administration.
Mm-hmm.
So we would revise that to who is who's running DCCA in 2024, and we would get a correct answer. So your data, really, if it's sourcing that truth out of a outdated document, you know, you could find yourself, you know, in trouble. So you can go back in your instructions and give it, instructions saying, always, you know, source your information from the most recent documentation that you find, things like that.
In terms of this application, John, this would perhaps be inserted into a website as a chat window. Is that
that's
so that
exactly,
you can ask
that's
questions?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Right. So you put it on a website. We came up with a demo website. So Salesforce also has a web experience. They call it, I think, Digital Experiences, but it's a CRM type system. And you can easily put it onto the, well, easily is not the word, but it's trivial compared to some of the things you're going to have to set up if you're, you know, hand-rolling all this stuff yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So there's setup on the back end with the messaging, with flows and automations and things like that. But it's you just drop the component onto your CRM web page and save it, publish it, and you're ready to go. And you can open it up and view it live.
So do you see a future for what you just created?
I created for Tyler Tech, and I'm getting them the build document so that they can actually build it themselves. It's got very detailed documentation on how to actually go about making these.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm making that available to them. I'm not sure what they're going to do in the next step, but I've been thinking about ways to use this technology myself because Salesforce, for us, it's just a wonderful tool to use. We enjoy using it, and it makes developing things a lot quicker than it would normally take you if you were to have to build your own tech stack, use everything, and build up a website with a database on the back end. So a lot of that, all that structure is there for you. So for us, it was like, wow, how can we use this? I thought that I would like to use it internally inside DCCA
mm-hmm.
as a way of one thing that's really tricky for me is the personnel system, the personnel rules, and we have a lot of documentation on a drive, more documents than I can count. But I would like to just feed all that into the data cloud and have it pull answers from it. I can ask it, with flex time, what is the earliest I can come into work, and have it answer off of that. So that's kind of as an intranet kind of tool, I'd like to see that used.
I want to give Mike a chance to kind of share where can people find more information about the game that they kind of created a prototype, and hopefully there might be a future for that.
Yeah, we are currently talking with the project sponsor about continuing the game, and people can hopefully eventually find out more from the HACC website, the hacc.hawaii.gov. And I wanted to give a quick shout-out and thanks to my teammates of Alex, Chris, Lawrence, Angela, and Scott for helping me make the app for the hackathon.
Yeah, well, I'll be keeping a close lookout to see if, the app, both of your applications kind of have a life after the Hawaii Annual Code Challenge. And I do want to congratulate you both for, doing some great work in a relatively short period of time. I do want to thank you guys for joining me and sharing about the work that you guys have both have accomplished. John Johnson is with the team Married with Children, and Mike Avendano is with Code with Aloha. And I want to thank you both for joining us today. And of course, thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about a dual use accelerator called JSTAR-X. If you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HPR One every Friday or anytime via the HPR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe, you stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.